Good morning.
Good morning.
Or good evening, wherever you are. How is the sound? Okay, in the back. Well, thank you to Linda Roshi for inviting me to come here and give a talk. And thank you all for being here to support each other and to spend this precious Sunday morning with me. And I think I've met some of you, maybe not all, but for those of you who don't know me, I'm Lucy Hsiao. I practiced at San Francisco Zen Center for quite a bit. And that's where I met Greg and Linda and spent a lot of time together practicing and walking and eating and all that. I'm always happy to see them. And I'm happy to see many of you who I've met or ran into over the years, and I'm happy to meet some new friends today. So thank you very much. How many of you have been to Tassajara this summer? Have gone down? Oh. Was it something?
It was the absence of something.
Yeah. I'm sure each of you probably had different responses to it when you saw the ground where the Zendo used to stand, the old Zendo, or second old Zendo. So I was there last month leading a retreat called Bringing Life to Life. And the moment I arrived, I went up, you know, the steps to see the ground. And it just moved me to tears. It's very complex. It's not just sadness. It's actually not so much sadness. It's just some really powerful feelings about impermanence and about transformation, and feelings from all the body memories. All the times going up the steps from the east side or the west side, going into onto the Ingawa and stepping into that threshold, into the silence, all that memory, and the crab apple trees behind the Zendo. I remember, Greg, you told me that's crab apple tree, and wasn't that crab apple tree behind the Zendo?
There's a crab apple tree and a big old plum tree that used to drop mindfulness plums on the tin roof.
Yeah. I was a little bit attached to that crab apple tree, I have to say. After morning program, when we, you know, we were taking down our robes, that's the spot where I would take down my okesa, take off my okesa. And seeing that tree living through different seasons. And now now it's gone. And the zendo is gone. But it gives all of that, gives way to something different, something new. And so so as some of you have been there this summer know, now the retreat hall, the large retreat hall, doubles as the zendo. So it goes through the zendo retreat hall transformation back and forth a couple times a day. It's quite amazing how the community just quickly adapted to this sudden change. And every morning you come to the retreat hall, if it looks like a zendo, feels like a zendo. And even with the dividers and the floor tons. And then right after morning program, the Eno and some of the students would quickly put all the cushions away, put the dividers away, and it turns back into a retreat hall. Except for the altar, which is a great reminder of our old zendo. It's the same altar. So the altar is still, it doesn't get moved, at least for the retreat we were in. It still sits in the middle of the hall. There's a different Buddha, but the Guan Yin statue is still there. And it's a different Guan Yin statue because it's burned halfway, right in the middle. If you look at it from one side, it's still the old Guan Yin. If you look at it from the other side, it's a blackened Guan Yin. All of that is quite moving. And also the retreat group, we just work with what we have. And when we do our stretching, when we do our circles, instead of, you know, we used to take up the whole retreat hall space, now we take most of just half of the room and squeeze tightly into a big circle because the altar is sitting in the middle. It all worked out just fine. In fact, it just, I feel that it gave a lot of new energy, new life to our practice. And no matter what happens, Zazen continues. And people just walk, like taking a few more minutes to walk the path into the zendo and sit quietly, and come out and step into the activities of the day. In a way, nothing really changed in the midst of this big change. As I was thinking about how, you know, my experience this summer and my experience of the community and the practice, the ongoing, the continuous practice in the valley, I was reminded of these lines from the Song of the Jewel Mirror Samadhi. When I was preparing for this talk, and I thought, oh, that would be something to talk about. The Song of the Jewel, Mirror Samadhi, Bao Jing San Mei Ge, or Hokyo Sanmai. Most of you have studied it, chanted it, or heard about it. Anybody who has not heard of this chant? It's a wonderful text, and it's long, and so I'm going to just talk about the last couple lines, and you can go back and read the whole text. Song of the Jewel Mirror Samadhi. Bao Jing, Jewel Mirror. Our mind, our true mind, our true self. So the last four, it's four lines. Each line has just four characters. I'm sure most of you have heard, remember it, and probably love it very much. The translation at San Francisco Zen Center goes, practice secretly, working within, like a fool, like an idiot. Just to continue in this way is called the host within the host. Is it the translation you use here?
Not quite.
Not quite, but the same feeling.
Same feeling?
Yeah. Does any of you remember the translation you use here? Just the last four line. Okay. Would you like to read it for me? Song of the Jewel Mirror Samadhi.
Hokyo Zamai?
Yeah.
It is not reached by feelings or consciousness.
The very end.
Maybe this isn't the end.
May I?
Yeah.
Okay, so am I. Ah. With practice hidden, function secretly, like a fool, like an idiot, just to do this continuously is called the host within the host. Close, right? Same. I'm going to maybe just read the Chinese and then character by character. 潜行密用如鱼如履。潜行密用, okay, I'm starting over. 潜行密用如鱼如履。但能相续明主宗主. So it rhymes a little, right? 潜行密用. 潜行, 潜. When you go diving, that's the character we use, diving under, moving beneath the surface. You can say hidden or secret, but mainly it's like going deeply without, and quietly, without attracting a lot of attention. You just do it secretly. I don't feel like it gets to that. diving. How do you translate it? Practice, yeah.
How about under the radar?
Under the radar. I like that. Practice without attracting attention, as if you're under the radar. I'm elaborating. It's not an official translation. Don't quote me. Mi yong, mi. Subtle, close, very close together, like stitches, like the stitches you use when you do sewing. In fact, you might have heard of men mitsu, mi, mitsu, mi. The function, yong is the function. So the function of practice, continuous non-interruption, attention to all the details, the use of practice, the function of practice. Perhaps it's also the hallmark of Soto Zen practice. So, qian xing, to practice, xing, xing means to practice, to walk, to conduct yourself in some ways. So qian xing mi yong, the first four characters, pretty much talks about continuous practice, talks about, Dogen Zenji has a whole fascicle about Gyoji, continuous practice. The Gyo is this, I'm going back and forth between Chinese pronunciation and Japanese pronunciation, is this practice, Xing, conduct, walk. So the official translation is to practice secretly working within. Ru yu ru lu. Like a fool, like an idiot. Yu, ru is like. Yu is simple, foolish, not calculated. Lu, the second one is slow-witted, dull. So to practice like you're not a very clever person, not calculating what you get and what you don't get. To practice like a dull person, that you don't try to rush ahead of yourself or rush ahead of everybody else. And being steady. Being simple, basically. So practice secretly working within, like a fool, like a slow-witted person. 但能相续，明主中主。但能相续，但能相续. Simply continue. Simply continue to practice like this. Just to continue in this way. Ming Zhu Zhong Zhu is called the host within the host. I think everybody agrees to that last translation, host within the host. So in Zen, there is the image of host and guest, which represent the absolute and the relative. Or the emptiness and phenomena. Or you might say our true nature and all the changing conditions. So the host is the nature of all things. And the guest is what comes and goes. And why does it say here it's host within the host? It means as our practice continues to mature, we no longer separate host and guest. We no longer said, okay, when I sit on the zafu, I'm practicing. And when I go out and go shopping, go make dinner, then that's something else. Practice becomes seamless from one place to the next, just seamlessly flowing from one activity to the next. There's no distinction between who is the guest, who is the host. The host is completely at ease in all the changing conditions. We continuously are in touch with our awakened nature, our awareness, which is an expression of our awakened nature. So just to continue in this way, simply to continue this practice is called the host within the host. It's called being fully aware, being completely at ease with all things. Well, do your best. Simply keep going, breath after breath, step after step. Simply making mistakes and making adjustments all the time. Well, mistakes with quote unquote. Meeting different conditions and trying to harmonize with the conditions. In that process, you might like rub against something. And then you make a little adjustment. So this past weekend, the 3-day long weekend, I went to a retreat with a small group of people who I sit with. So we drove up to Gualala, a small town by the ocean. I don't know if you know, 3 hours north of here. So we had a little 3-day session, and just being quiet, just sitting, walking, sitting, walking. And then in between, we have different shifts, helping to clean up. And then before and after meals, there are a couple minutes before each meal to go refresh yourself and make tea and something, and then a break after each meal. And so because we were going to be there for a few days, and the host had many interesting and nice teacups, mugs, and so everybody claimed, you know, adopted one cup and put a label on the cup and just continue to use it throughout the session. And so someone who talked to me later said that, you know, he went through a lot of changes the past few years, and he got to a place where he kind of let a lot of the things settle and let the things that let go of some of the things that doesn't serve him, and feel a lot of ease now. And so during the sit, he had a very nice sit in the session, and then one morning, between zazen and before breakfast, there are usually a few minutes because, you know, we have to go check the kitchen and see if breakfast is ready. So we had a few minutes, and then he loved coffee. I think you can relate, some of you. So he really wanted to make a cup of coffee before breakfast. So he rushed over to the break room after that nice long sit, and thinking about the coffee he wanted to make. As he got to the break room, he found another person there making tea using his favorite cup. Because the label, you know, he put on wasn't very clear, maybe a little kind of hidden or something. So the other person didn't pay attention. And then he immediately went to the person and said, "This is my cup." Well, he broke the silence, not only that, but also he made the other person kind of embarrassed. So the other person, "Oh, I'm sorry." And so he poured the tea into a different cup. And then he got his coffee mug back, make his coffee. As soon as he sipped his first sip of coffee, he realized what happened. He was like, "Just when I thought I could let go of everything and just be completely at ease with myself, this coffee mug just gave me feedback." So he later he went to apologize to the other person. I mean, which it wasn't. You know, everything was just fine. It wasn't like a big drama, but he learned. He learned, like, just from the Zendo to the break room, there's so much practice. To be aware our own body and mind, to be aware our environment, what kind of impact we might have on our environment, on other people. I love that story. In fact, most of what I heard from the group, you know, during the practice discussion were little things like that, from the break time, from the kitchen time, not from the cushion, not on the cushion. I think that was a great illustration of like carrying practice moment after moment. It's okay to make so-called mistakes. It just helps us to see our habits, to see how we are attached to things, attached to our routines, and see that and acknowledge that and let that go. So practice secretly working within, like a fool, like an idiot, just to continue. In this way, it's called a host within the host. So on my way in and out of Tassajara, all of you probably who have been there know there around May and June there are lots of yucca plants blooming. The most magnificent blooms, cream color. I don't know, hundreds and hundreds of them bloom from one tall stalk. So on our way out, there was one big yucca plant just sticking out from the cliff on the side. And we had to stop and admire it for a moment. And I was told by Leslie and Keith that the yucca plants around Tassajara, you know, they grow, they bloom just once, and then they die. And it takes them years to, well, not the same plant, but after they die, the seeds get carried or scattered into other places. They take years to grow again. I think I remember Leslie told me 7 years, or Keith. Does that sound right?
Sure.
I looked online. I looked yucca around Tassajara, and it gives me a bunch of information, and it says from 5 to 20 years, depending on the conditions. On the climate. And so for the first few years, not for a number of years, the plant just keep growing, the rosette in the base and just store energy from the ground, and it grows and keeps, you don't notice it. For years, they are just doing their thing on the ground. You don't even notice it. And then one spring, when all the conditions are right, it just, the flowering stalk just quickly grows and kind of shoots up, and quickly they bloom. And the blooming time is just a few weeks. So all the energy that they store, that they, you know, they got from years of cultivation. And for a few weeks, they just put on this great display of the beauty of their blooms. That's when people notice. But that's not their whole life. That's an expression of their life in that moment. Their whole life includes the seeds in the ground, the slow growing period of the base of the rosette. And then when everything comes together, they just flower, they just send out these gigantic flowering stalk. And just express themselves completely. Practice secretly, working within, like a fool, like an idiot, just to continue in this way is called the host within the host. 但能相续, 明主中主. Thank you very much. And that's what I was going to say for the talk. And we have a few more minutes. If anybody has anything to share, any comments or feedback or question, please feel free to raise your hand. And please say your name so I know who you are.
Thank you. My name is Sue.
Hi, Sue.
Thank you for your talk and your teaching and the vast wisdom and my introduction to understanding these phrases, which I never did. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
You're quite welcome. Thank you for being here, Sue. I think we have Ross.
Hi, Lucy.
Hi.
This is Ross. And I was thinking about the Sandokai, uh-huh. Where two types of people are described as some are sharp and some are dull,
uh-huh.
But there's not any kind of bias on one or the other, it's just an expression of that. And I'm wondering about the thought of practicing like a fool, like an idiot, and the way I heard it was, don't overthink things. If you happen to be sharp, practice more simply and don't try to get ahead of others.
Mm-hmm.
And what encouragement can you offer people who are maybe caught by their thinking. They just happen to be born or they're cultivated in such a way that they do tend to overthink and they get caught in those the thinking, whereas a so-called simple person may be in a better position to just be open to the teachings of Buddha.
Thank you. So I think the Sandokai, the expression of being quick and slow, or whatever translation they use, comes from, I think, the Platform Sutra, where the sixth ancestor talked about the gradual and the sudden. So in essence, there's no distinction in our Buddha nature, slow or sudden. It's just we have different temperaments, different characters, and different conditions. And when it comes to practice, though, in our nature, there's no quick and slow in our Buddha nature. But in our personal causes and conditions, we're different. Each person is different. And I think the Sandokai also, I think, refers to the Southern School and the Northern School, the slow and the gradual cultivation and the sudden enlightenment. And so the slow and quick here is not about the thinking mind. It's about cultivation of practice continuously, slowly sometimes. And then the insight can come quickly. And the insight comes from deeper wisdom under the radar. It's not from our thinking mind. So when we pay too much attention to our thoughts and taking it as real, it's getting away from our practice. I mean, of course, we can study and we can learn and we can acquire knowledge and it's all helpful, but that's not the essence of practice. And coming back to both Sandokai and Hokyu Sanmai, we just keep practicing. Whether we are a sharp person, a clever person, or a slow, simple person, the practice asks us to simply be aware. And to do this continuously, to be aware that I have nothing to say, to be aware that I have a lot to say. You know, Sojin Roshi, my memory of Sojin Roshi oftentimes have to do with food. So sometimes we would go out and have lunch, dim sum or whatever. And I remember a couple of times we were talking about Soto practice, you know, this Manmitsu style. You know, in China and Japan, when they eat noodle soup, they slurp. And, you know, maybe in the West it's bad table manner, but it's quite normal in Asia when you eat noodle soup and you just slurp this one long noodle, just make big sound, and then and then you eat that noodle. And then Sojourner Roshi said a couple times to me that you might have heard of that. I'm sure he has said that to you too. Soto Zen practice is like slurping a long noodle that never ends.
Thank you, Lucy. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Go
food
find
for,
some
food for thought.
Long noodle, everybody. Okay. We
have...
Yes, it's coming.
Hi, Lucy. I'm Gary.
Gary.
Yes.
Thank you.
Help me with the host within the host. Like, where's the relative when the host is within the host?
Well, the host within the host, when all the guests have become hosts, you are just one with everything. You are at ease. So it's just emphasizing that you are completely at ease within or being the host. So you might experience it, you know, I mean, when Dongshan, Master Dongshan talked about hosts and guests, actually he used a different, also in other verses, he used different images, the five positions, often translated as five ranks. I don't like the translation. Five ranks. Wei means positions. It's not hierarchy. Five different positions. It talks about how relative and absolute interact in different conditions. It's not like this is better. Let's go from first grade to second grade. So sometimes when we practice for a while, we recognize all the changing conditions. Like after we sit zazen, we step out, we recognize, oh, I have this reaction to this thing. And so I know, okay, I'm practicing. I'm aware of these things. So there's the host and guest. And at this point, you recognize that you are looking at the guest from the host position. And sometimes you are thrown in the midst of all the conditions, or the you mingle with all the guests, and you remind yourself there's a host in this. And so in these different times, there's still a distinction of host and guest. I'm practicing, and this is my life, my conditions, and I am me, this person is aware of this, and I'm responding to this. And as our practice becomes more mature, it becomes a flow. You don't distinguish. This is practice, that's my life. And you engage in the changing conditions without self-centeredness, basically. You dissolve yourself in this vast interconnectedness of all things. And you just keep living. And you keep living in a way that that you are supporting yourself and everybody else without thinking about it. end. In Taoist term, it's called wu-wei. Wu-wei, non-doing, non-action. It's not like I'm not doing anything. It's just I'm not doing from the self-centered point of view. And it also says wu-wei or wu-bu-wei. Not doing, but there is nothing that cannot be done. Mm-hmm. So you just keep doing it, but you no longer distinguish yourself and other, you know, your practice and other things that happens in your life. I don't know if that helps.
No, it helps. I think you're kind of saying that something, there's a shift in the relative. The relative's still there, but you embrace it a lot differently with a different. So the host within the host is kind of the relative. I mean, the absolute just keeps winding around the relative.
I like you doing this winding around.
I'm here. I'm sorry. That's good enough.
Well, my understanding is that both Hokusanmai and Sandokai, they talk about how absolute and relative are constantly interpenetrating. They are not separate. What separates them is our mind. Life continues to live, and every moment of living, every expression comes from the absolute, comes from emptiness. It arises and it falls away, arises and falls away. It comes from that vastness of you might call it the Tao, you might call it emptiness. And each moment is just a particular expression of it. And essentially, there is no distinction. It's just an expression. It comes and it falls away, comes and falls away. And we try oftentimes we try to separate this. This is a moment of in my life, and it's different. It's separate from emptiness. It's separate from our Buddha nature. But without Buddha nature, without emptiness, this cannot be. Okay.
Thank you.
I'm not sure if you are convinced.
Not sure either.
I'm not sure if I was being a fool and an idiot enough. okay, I think I saw some signal of the striker. Thank you all very much. Thank you so much.